o'clock at night, and I've just dug a bunch of holes and haven't got anywhere that I want to get to. So he said, Mom, he's like, you're trying, in your head it sounds great, and the reason it sounds great in your head, because you know what you want to say and where you want to go, but you're fearful of saying things and being 100% honest. So I want to be 100% honest, and I want to reveal my heart, and that's not easy, because I honestly rather be the paint on the wall than stand here in some ways, right? But knowing that I want to encourage the 20-some-year-olds, I'm like, oh, yeah, I'll do that, right? So a little bit scary. So once I get started, I hopefully it'll flow better, and I can communicate where I want to go with this. They asked me to do servitude. And when you give your outline to the elders, they're like, what does unity and uniformity have to do with servitude? And so I said, I know that I think a little differently. And I said, but as Sarita, I did this before, and she didn't understand, but she finally saw where I was going that one time I did it. And I was like, so I was thankful that they asked. I was just, so I'm hoping I can communicate all this, is basically what I'm trying to say. So here we go. All right. I've wondered for a long time if many churches have really lost their purpose. You know, you live long enough, and you see in different churches, and they come because of tradition, or they come out of obligation. But do they really understand their purpose? Brian's niece, she lives in Alabama, and she, her church closed down because of COVID, like a lot of churches did. And it just opened up last June, after a year and 3 months of not being in assembling together. There's many churches that decided to go down to one service because of COVID. And then after assembling together, they decided to stay with one service. It just makes me wonder how we have lost the reason for coming together and our purpose for being together. So it's not a secret that when COVID came out, because of my background in sciences, because I was raised as an, I was not raised in the church, and because we home educate our kids, and I already had in my head that some thoughts about, you know, what the government teaches. The where I landed was definitely different on the spectrum than where a lot of other people landed. It never bothered me that people thought differently, but I sure struggled within myself. And the reason I struggled within myself is because I was struggling to do what I thought was right, and yet I'm a pleaser. I want to please people. Those two don't go together often. You know, you're trying to please people, and you're struggling to do what you think is right. Those don't always line up. So I would come to services, and I would wear a mask, and I felt this push against everybody, right? I would come, I would check off the boxes of Christianity, right? We sung, we prayed, I listened to a sermon, I took communion. And then I would walk out the door as fast as I could. And the reason I did it is because I felt I didn't know who to approach. I didn't know who to talk to. I didn't know if they wanted me to be 6 feet away. And I'm a pleaser, right? I'm a pleaser. And I was scared to approach anybody. And I wanted to please them. And I didn't know what to do. And it just was this pull back and forth and back and forth. And I'd get anxious to come to church, and anxiety would come. And so I told Brian, after the end of it all, there's got to be something more to being a Christian than the check in the box, five acts of worship. There has to be something more. I know and I respect those that have chosen to be home because of immune compromise. Totally respect that. I get it why the Alsips are staying at home because they're trying to raise a little girl and they have to watch out for their health. Totally get it. Totally respect it. I totally get those people that are staying at home and they have to take care of parents and they're worried about their parents. Totally get it. I had to take care of both of mine till death. 100% get it. And I respect those people who say that they're outside, they're more exposed to things and more exposed to the virus. And so they don't want to be here because they're afraid they'll give it to members of the church. And I respect that. But there's a different side of that coin that I want you all to think about. When people don't come, it's like my toe went out the door. Or my finger is out the door. Or my ear is out the door. Right? A piece of me is missing. Now, you can't walk very well without a big toe. It's hard to balance, right? And I appreciate what they're doing. But as a Christian, I need them. You know, I need them here. So what is... Many times, I have felt like I just don't fit. I've told Brian before, I don't fit. I think different ways about different things, and I don't fit. And I want to fit. I want to find my place that I can help the church. I'm like, where can I fit? And you know who scares me the most? It's not the people that I'm closest to. And it's not the stranger, because they don't know me to judge me. I would have to say the ones I fear mostly would be the ones that I kind of know, which sadly to say is probably most of you. I'm afraid of being judged by my sisters that I don't know very well. Shame on me. So when I asked Brian, what should I do to try to fit in? I just don't know where I'm going to fit. I want to help. I don't want this checkbox mentality anymore. I don't want it. I want something more. But where do I fit? This summer, I read Ephesians, and I want to share what I found. Maybe. On. So in Ephesians, this is Ephesians 2, 11 through 22. And the first part of Ephesians talks about the problem under the Old Testament. And I want you to notice some things. So the Jews and Gentiles were at enmity with each other. Try to say that. That means that they were opposed. They were hostile towards one another. And you see where the Gentiles before the new kingdom came along, right? So the Gentiles were in the flesh, Oh, before I start that, I want to show something that's really cool that I found out this summer. So you notice like this is kind of like a sideways bell-shaped curve. Well, the Hebrews wrote in couplets. And so you notice the ones like 11 and 22, 20, they're couplets. They mirror each other. And so I've been discovering these all throughout Ephesians. It's kind of like us typically writing an introductory paragraph and three paragraphs, body paragraphs in conclusion. But they wrote like this in couplets. And you see it all over Ephesians. And I think that's pretty cool. And another thing I discovered before I get into this is when you hear you in Hebrew, it's always referring to the plural you, which I thought was pretty cool too. So, but in this situation, under the old law, God describes the Gentiles, they're in the flesh. They're estranged from the citizens of Israel, you know, foreigners, without God. They were far off. And down here, they're enmity with the Jews. So you see the problem with the old law and the Gentiles. So if you look at the temple, this is the temple, you'll notice that there's a court of the Gentiles. And right here, all the way around the inner courts, was called the balustrade. And it was a fence that had 13 doors or openings. And outside those 13 doors or openings was a sign written in three different languages. And those three different languages said, no foreigner is allowed past this point or penalty of death. In other words, the Gentiles could not go past that. And if they did go past that point, their penalty was death. The Jews could, but the Gentiles couldn't. So if you notice in verse 14, I believe this is metaphorically talking about that wall of balustrade. When Jesus came, he was the one who made the two into one, having destroyed the barrier of the wall, the enmity in the flesh. When Jesus came, he broke down that wall, that division, that hostility between the Jews and the Gentiles. And the two that were at once odds with one another, opposed to one another, end up becoming one with one another. And the result of that occurring, and Jesus doing that for us, ended up for peace, for the Gentiles to be near. They're no longer foreigners or immigrants, but fellow citizens and household members of God. So when Jesus came, he was able to destroy that wall and bring the two that were so unlike each other together. Do you think the Jews and Gentiles had everything in common when they came to church together? Oh, no. They washed their hands different. They had different feasts and holidays. They ate clean and unclean animals. The Sabbath was considered different during their time. Oh, no. They were totally different. So when I read this, and it dawned on me this summer, I realized I can be different and still fit. I can still be unified with you and you and you and you and you and you and you. I can still do it. I can still fit. I can still fit, even though I was not raised in the church, with people who were raised in the church. I can still fit with tattoos or no tattoos, mask or no mask, vaccines, no vaccines, Caucasian, African American, Asian. You know, there's a force trying to divide us all. And it's a powerful force, and it's an evil force. And the only way we can learn to start serving each other is we've got to realize what we're unified in, no matter how different we are. So how do we do that? How do we come in unity with one another, even though we're so different, right? How do we do that? So, in Ephesians 4:3, the purpose of the church is, it talks about we're to use our gifts to grow in the body in both faith and love. That's our purpose. To grow in the body in both faith and love. And in Ephesians 4:1, it says, eagerly maintain the unity and the bond of peace. That word eagerly is often translated diligently. In the New International Translation, it means making every effort, using speed or haste to move to unity. It's not just going to fall down and hit us on the head. It's something we have to work towards. It's not just going to happen, y'all. It's something we have to do and work towards. In marriage, after you say the I do's and you hug a hug a kiss kiss a, you know, like that song goes. In marriage, they say, if you read the research, it says it takes at least 15 hours after you're married to spend quality time with your spouse. And if you don't do that, what happens is they find that there's a decrease in passion, more argument, less forgiveness, and less peace. Well, we also need to spend time together in order to learn to be more compassionate and caring with one another. Not just in prayer and song, but in getting to know each other, right? So I have a question. Do you spend 15 hours a week getting to know other Christians? What about 10? 5? 3? When you come to services, do you make an effort to reach out to anybody else? I haven't always. I think another way we can maintain the unity is when we work together, it tends to draw us together, right? When you work together, it draws you together. We see that. That's not a stranger in our jobs. When you work towards a project, you become closer to one another. Or when you're on a sports team, you work together to practice together for the common goal of playing well together. When you work together, you draw closer together. You know, Tabitha told me one time that she was worried about being a burden. I looked at Tabitha, and I said, Tabitha, you're the greatest blessing that happened to this church. And you know why? It's because she drew us all together to work for the common goal of trying to make her life better. She's a huge blessing to this church. We have not done anything compared to what she's done for us. And I'm so thankful for that. We need to work together to build the body and grow itself up in love. And it's not just going to happen. Love is a relationship word. You know, in the Bible, in 1 John, it says that God is love. There's no way it could have said that unless God and the Holy Spirit and Christ dwell together. Because love is a relationship word. There's no way we can love our neighbor as ourselves in isolation. It can't happen. We can't keep that commandment in isolation and love our neighbor as we love ourselves. It's a relationship. We become the best version of ourselves in community. A fifth way. In Ephesians, it talks about putting off and putting on. We put off the old humanity and put on the new humanity. And I'm sure the Jews and Gentiles had a lot of work in this, right? And for us to come together in unity, we have to put off and put on. And notice we can't put on the right side by ourselves, right? Speaking truth, I guess you could talk to yourself, but share with others, speak words to build up others, kindness, compassion, forgiveness. We can't even put on that side in isolation by ourselves. It has to be in community. So, in Ephesians 4, 8 through 10, and I'm not going to read it all, but I want to allude to this, and this is cool too. In verse 8, it says, "Therefore it says, when he ascended on high, he led a host of captives, and he gave gifts to men." And it goes on and down there, and in verse 11, it talks about he gave the apostles and the prophets and evangelists. Talking about Jesus or God gave. God gave this church gifts. And you know what the gifts are? It's every single one of you that has a gift. And I know you have a gift because Matthew 25 says, y'all at least got one. God blessed this church with y'all. Y'all, right? He blessed this church with y'all. You all are a blessing to this church. You're a gift. You're a gift to each other. You're a gift to me. I'm thankful for the gifts God's given me. All right. So you can look at some of these gifts that God has given the church too. And some of them apply more to us today. And some of them are written more for to verify the word by the miracles and things like that. I only want to speak about a few of these and just kind of expand upon those. You'll see teacher up there. And I don't want you to think as a teacher, as a person who gets up in front of a big, large group and teaches. Because that's not always the definition of a teacher. A teacher can be somebody one-on-one. It can be a mentor. It could be somebody, I know I was not raised in the church, and so my teacher was watching other women raise their children and going to them and imitating some of the things that they did. Service. Service is a broad general term. It's like ministry. And the reason it's so broad is because there's so many different ways to serve. And the list is numerous, numerous. Exhorts or exhortation. Exhortation or encourages. Some of us are very good encouragers. It's even better when we can encourage by using God's word. Reminding our sisters, our brothers, and anybody who will listen about the promises God has made us. That's the best kind of encouragement. We also see further down in Ephesians, like in 28, about generosity. We're supposed to not steal, but yet work so we have enough to share, which is not on this PowerPoint. I think 1 Peter 4:11 sums it up. Wrong one. Each of you should use whatever gift you have received to serve others. As faithful stewards of God's grace and in various forms, if anyone speaks, they should do so as one who speaks the very words of God. If anyone serves, they should do so with the strength God provides, so that in all things God may be praised through Jesus Christ. To him be the glory and the power ever and ever. Amen. Brian and I were talking and about some of this, and he said, can you imagine going, somebody being in hell, and they look and say, hey, what are you in for? I says, murder. And he goes, hey, what are you in for? Nothing. Never use my gifts for God. And we started thinking about that. So the next slide is a small book I read. It's called The Autopsy of a Deceased Church. And it looked at 14 churches and kind of looked at why they were dying. Why were these churches dying? I'm not going to go through all these, but I want to touch on a few of them. So a church rarely prayed together. A church that stays together prays together, right? Prayer is the lifeblood for the early church. The growth of a church without prayer is like life without breath. It can't happen. If you read in Acts 2:42, we read that they devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching, to fellowship, and to the breaking of bread and prayer. They devoted themselves. The second thing I want to discuss is this one is kind of confusing. The church refused to look like the community. To me, it means that they put on the community. When I read it this way, but when you read actually what it's having to talk about, it's really stating that the church, people of the church, I'm not talking about the church itself as a work, but the people of the church do not go out to the community to influence. And let me give you two examples. In the book, it's stated that the guy went to a school and said, hey, what can I do here at the school to help the school out? He goes, you know, we do need to paint it. So he went and gathered a bunch of Christians, and he went and painted the church. Oldwire, at one time, when Joplin had a tornado, a bunch of the Christians got together, and they got their chainsaws and everything else, and they went up there as a unit and started helping people that they saw. People were very touched by what Old Wire Church did, right? They were very touched by it. What do you think those people are going to think of when they think, you know, I want to go find God? Who are they going to think about? They're going to be thinking about those people that came and helped them. They were in the community. And I've talked to Zachary. He's preaching. I don't know if some of you may not know that. And I've talked to other people about why are we potentially losing our kids within our church? And what I see is they believe church happens right here. And they're not seeing us take church to the world. They're not seeing us influence the community and do good for the community. The third thing is the great commission becomes the great omission. We're not reaching out to teach the lost like we need to. Brian does not consider himself a teacher. He doesn't. He doesn't consider himself a teacher. And one day I was on the back row, and there was a man sitting down at the end, and I introduced myself to him. And he said, this is the first Bible study I've ever been to. And I said, would you like to study one-on-one? And he said, yeah. So I ran out, and I found Brian. I said, this guy needs a Bible study. Chuck's out of town. I said, our time is limited. We need to do something. So Brian met him after church, and a lot of other people went and encouraged him as well. I think Kyle and Xavier and a lot of you all went and talked to him. So Brian got his number and contacted him. And we realized we can't depend on other people to do what God has called us all to do, right? We can't do it. I mean, we can ask for help and assistance, but we got to step in that game. We got to step in. We met with him, and Beth and Nathan came and met with us. And we met in the classroom that Saturday, and we went, Brian prepared something. Brian is dyslexic, and so sometimes keeping things in your memory is really hard. That's part of the reason he always felt like he was going to mess up. He went over it and over it and over it and over and over it. And Nathan and Beth were great because they balanced what we couldn't do with him. He was actually in his 20s. It drew us together, right? We had a purpose. It bound us together. And Brian came out to the car after that study. He goes, "That was fun." He's like, "I understand why this can be addictive to some people." I said, "Yeah, that was fun." His name's Eric, and Brian's still in contact with him, and he said he'll be back after the first, and we're praying that he will, and we're praying we'll still have a study with him. We've had a lot of visitors, lots of visitors lately. There's no way that one person can get to every single visitor. There's no way. We need to be praying for God to give us courage to talk to him if we're introverted, because we're all needed. We're all needed to encourage them. We're all needed to meet the college. There's not enough doing it. There's too many, and we're losing them. And who knows which one would have been that next Eric that needed a Bible study. All right, I'm going to ask quickly before I close this out. So, Amanda, what is something you wrote on your card? Able to get along with difficult people. Mackenzie? Make anybody laugh. Beth? Willing to try. Debbie? Empathetic. Hardworking. Make people laugh. Abby? Coping with tragedy. Josie? Time management, delegation, perceptive, listen, hospitality, listen, Sarita, I know you got one. Caretaking. I believe your name is Debbie, too. Observant. Teaching. Encourager. Analytical. Therapist. Gina, what is one thing you're good at? Talking. Motivated. You, yeah, Diane. Compassion, yeah. Organization, eager to serve. Compassion. Caroline, what is one thing you're good at? You can talk to people. Yes, you do. What about you? Compassion? Lexi, did you say that? Yeah. Do you have one? You have something. Layla. Talking. What is your name? I'm Lavelle. What is one thing you're good at? encouragement. Yes. Agreeable. So listening and compassion, but sense of humor. Do what? Friendly is a good one. Nikki? Level-headed. Can you all do one thing this year? Can you take that gift that God has given you and plan one thing, and invite somebody to do it with you? If you're compassionate, invite them to go with you to rain or shower somebody with compassion. If you're empathetic, if you organize a, what was the thing, the traveling potluck thing? Progressive dinner. Can you do that? Can each one of you just organize one thing to bring us together? Just one. And let's put it on the calendar and work together. I have one more. So in Genesis, God was with Adam and Eve, right? They were with each other. And God talked with them and conversed with them. He wanted to be with them. Kind of a little bit of like heaven on earth kind of thing. But man blew it. He sinned and blew that relationship. God desired so much to be with man that he was like, let's build a tabernacle after they left to Egypt. And God's presence filled that tabernacle, and it represented him being with man. And also with the temple as well, you see that as well. And then Jesus came, and in John, it says, the Word became flesh and dwelt among us. The Word, meaning Jesus, came in flesh, and that word dwelt literally means tabernacle, which I think is pretty cool too. So Jesus tabernacled among us. So now look at Ephesians 2:21. 19, somewhere in there. I'll read it all. So then you are no longer strangers and aliens, but you're fellow citizens with the saints and members of the household of God, built on the foundation of the apostles and prophets, Christ Jesus himself being the cornerstone, in whom the whole structure being joined together grows in the holy temple. The whole structure grows in the holy temple in the Lord, and him you are also being built together into a dwelling place for God by the Spirit. We are like little pieces of heaven, right? God dwells within us. We're little pieces of heaven. I think of the song Sanctuary. I'm a horrible singer. Lord, prepare me to be a sanctuary, pure and holy, tried and true. With thanksgiving, I'll be your living sanctuary for you. Y'all, it's time, right? We need to quit checking the boxes. We need to get in the game. There's a sign Brian forwarded me. Why you think that, you know, when you start doing something. And here, I see this more as a prayer. It says, when I stand before you, God, at the end of my life, I would hope that I would not have a single bit of talent left and could say I used everything you gave me. Thank you.